Women make up only about 10% of fire-related workforce as a whole. A training program teaches women how to conduct prescribed burns. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Last spring, in a Nebraska prairie, workers carrying drip torches carefully burned a narrow strip of prairie grass. They were creating the perimeter for a prescribed burn, a planned fire that removes dry vegetation and reduces the risk of severe wildfire. But this was not your typical burn crew. The team was composed almost entirely of women.
In fire as a whole, we tend to see that women make up somewhere around 10% of the workforce. You know, many women who work in fire are the only woman on their entire crew. There's a lot of siloing and isolation.
Lainia Quinn Davidson directs the Women in Fire Training Exchange Program. It runs 2-week-long training events for women from various backgrounds, from professional firefighters to those who have never worked with fire. She says that as climate change increases the risk of devastating wildfires, there's a growing need for a wide range of people who understand and are trained in techniques like prescribed burning.
You want different kinds of people thinking about the problems, and you want different kinds of leadership. You want people to feel comfortable in the work so that they can operate at their best.
So she says the program is helping expand and strengthen that workforce. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and James Kemp. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
You're listening to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. Just keeping up with the Trump administration's all-out war against our environment is exhausting. Fortunately, we in the Northwest are blessed with incredible activists, organizers, and more relevant to today, environmental attorneys, to help us understand the attacks so we can fight back effectively. And one of the best of those attorneys is Brenna Bell, formerly of 350 PDX and now with the Cragg Law Center. This episode features a recent presentation Brenna gave, along with Lauren Anderson of Oregon Wild and Grace Braylor from Cascadia Wildlands. They covered the seismic changes happening via the executive branch, including to the National Environmental Policy Act, how the definition of harm under the Endangered Species Act has changed to dramatically limit protections for species, and a lot more. I will give a quick disclaimer that this episode is a little wonkier than most. If you're really allergic to legalese, this one might not be for you, but I did find it fascinating and I learned a lot from Brenna, Grace, and Lauren. And as that not at all jingoistic cartoon of my youth said, knowing is half the battle. If you're listening on the radio, you're only going to hear Brenna's part of the presentation, but Grace's and Lauren's topics are just as important, and you can hear the full presentation by searching for Coast Range Radio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast app. If you already listened to a portion of this episode on the radio, you can skip ahead to about minute 30. Okay, my email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Please reach out anytime.
Okay, I can start with a little introduction. My name is Brenna. I'm the newest senior staff attorney with the Craig Law Center. Only been here about 2 months. Some of you might remember me from my work as the forest climate organizer for 350 PDX or with BARC. I'm also on the steering committee for the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance. I use she, her pronouns. I'm going to be one of the speakers today, and I'm going to introduce our overall webinar before jumping into it. This webinar series is the second of three, and it's put on by the North Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance, which is a regional network of organizations and individuals who are really focused at the intersection of forest policy and climate change. And we're coming to you all, friends and neighbors of the Forest Climate Alliance, to talk about what's going on with the federal government and how that impacts the work that we all do and are interested in. At the end, we will have time for questions and we'll have some action items that we'll talk about. But before we get there, we've got a lot of information. It's not great. It's a little sad. We've got some sad information for you all, but we feel like knowledge is power. And the more we share, the better we'll be together. So I'm going to start off, then I'll be passing it over to Grace Brailer from Cascadia Wildlands. And then we'll bring in Lauren to tee up a little bit about the roadless rule, which will be a focus of the next webinar. And I'm going to start by talking about a suite of executive actions that really affect us. I began working on public lands issues in 1997, so it's been almost 30 years. And this is a grim moment in that time span, looking back on what's going on. So I have a lot of information for you today. I will try and be lively, but I'm sorry for the deluge that's on your way. So we're going to start with a quick overview of the three branches of government that we've been tracking during this webinar series. So the last webinar focused on legislative actions, specifically on the Fix Our Forest Act. The legislative branch makes the laws. And today, we're focused on executive actions. The executive branch implements the laws, primarily through federal agencies. And our final webinar, which will be on August 27th, will focus on the judicial branch, which interprets the law. And as a sneak preview for that, I'll be back and I'll be talking about recent Supreme Court cases which worked to compound the political crisis that we're in. There are a lot of executive actions that affect issues the Forest Climate Alliance cares about. But in our short time together today, I'm focusing on those affecting federally managed lands. The majority of land in the West is managed by the federal government. And so these actions disproportionately affect our region. And I'm going to cover a few of the executive orders that got things moving, and then the regulatory changes that have come in their wake. And then Grace will discuss what these changes will mean for both communities and public who work with these lands and for the land itself. So first, casting back to January. Remember January? There were executive orders were coming fast and furious. And among all of those was this particular zinger called the Unleashing American Energy Executive Order. And this EO is mainly about promoting fossil fuel development and use. But I'll spare you most of that and just focus on what it does to NEPA. So a little backstory, NEPA, or the National Environmental Policy Act, was passed in 1970 and has been called the basic charter for the environment. What NEPA does, it does not itself require specific actions to protect the environment, but what it does require is that the government evaluate and disclose the impacts of major federal actions and ensure that the public can comment on these actions before a decision is made. And importantly, the Unleashing American Energy Executive Order revoked this Carter-era executive order and directed the CEQ to rescind those government-wide NEPA regulations and direct each federal department to prepare its own new set of regulations to guide NEPA implementation. This is a really big change. So previous NEPA regulations applied to over 80 federal agencies. And this led to some degree of consistency across the federal government in implementing NEPA analysis. Now, the Forest Service, which is in the Department of Agriculture, and the BLM, the other major forest land manager in the West, which is in the Department of the Interior, are going to have completely separate guidelines for environmental analysis, for public engagement, and these are going to be different from all the other federal departments. So we're in this time where each federal department is issuing its own set of interim final regulations, which all became effective immediately and bypassed important procedures for public notice and comment, which usually accompany major rule changes. So it's a mess. Luckily, for the purposes of this webinar, I'm just going to focus on the USDA regulations, Department of Interior, again, being vastly different from what the USDA is. But since most of the land that we work on with the Forest Climate Alliance is under the USDA, under the Forest Service, and we have a limited amount of time together, we're going to focus on the new NEPA regulations for the Forest Service. So some of the highlights. On the new NEPA regs, they massively expand the categorical exclusions from NEPA. And categorical exclusion is really hard to say a lot, so I'm just going to shorten it to CE. What is a CE? So again, a little bit of backstory about NEPA is that NEPA requires the government to analyze the impact of any major federal action that significantly impacts the human environment. If the agency has already analyzed and decided that a certain category of action will never have a significant impact on the environment, they can create a categorical exclusion from NEPA. So projects in that category don't need any environmental analysis. That's a CE. They've been around the whole time in NEPA, but these new regulations just massively expand the scope of what they can cover. So prior to these new regulations, most projects that are at the scale of things like a timber sale on a local forest got analyzed in an environmental assessment or an EA. But now these new regulations assume that CEs will be the norm for most projects because maybe just nothing has significant impacts anymore. So we're going to see an expansion of those, but there are still a few limitations. The first limitation is that the agency must show that the category they are relying on is applicable for the project that they are proposing. Because remember, there are certain categories of things that have already been explored and determined to never have a significant impact. For example, the Forest Service couldn't rely on a category or a categorical exclusion for routine road maintenance for a project that builds new roads or logs far away from the roadbed because it's not an applicable category. The other limitation is that they will still have to show that there are no extraordinary circumstances, it's one of the NEPA terms of art, which would make otherwise insignificant impacts significant. And extraordinary circumstances can include things like impacts on sensitive resources, like endangered species or historic sites or floodplains. Other examples of potential extraordinary circumstances are unknown impacts to public health or safety or highly controversial environmental effects or unique environmental risks. So if there are extraordinary circumstances that would bump this thing out of the category to no impact, of no impact, then it might be appropriate to look at an EA. So there's going to be a new NEPA document, as per these regulations, called the FANEC, the Finding of Applicability and No Extraordinary Circumstance. So in the past, a lot of our arguments around NEPA have centered around there are significant impacts, and the agency's FONSI, or finding of no significant impact, is inappropriate. Now I think we're going to have this new argument that the use of the CE is inappropriate And the FANEC is going to be the document that people are looking at. But there are some challenges about these FANECs. One, the agency can use any format they choose to document the FANEC as per the regulation. So what is it going to be? Are they just going to post on the website? Are they going to send out an email? Are they just going to secretly sign their FANEC? We don't know. Another issue is that there's no public comment required for the FANEC and maybe no public notice required. And another challenge with it is that immediately after the FANEC is signed, implementation of the project can begin immediately. And so there is no period of review. There's no pre-decisional objection like in other things like for an EA or an EIS. And so there's going to be a lot going on around this FANEC that we're going to have to figure out. And for projects that still do rise to the level of an environmental assessment or an EIS, these regulations also have some rollbacks. The main one being that there is less required public involvement. So public notice and comment, which is key to like the heart of NEPA, is no longer required for environmental assessments. And it's somewhat of a mystery for environmental impact statements as the regulations include, well, they end the requirement that there is a draft EIS. Like before, if you've ever had a project that raises to the level of an EIS, like something that we know is going to have a significant impact, there's a draft environmental impact statement, there is public comment on it, and then there's a final environmental impact statement. And in the final, it responds to the comments. Well, that is actually inside of the statute, of the NEPA statute. So they can't get rid of the requirement for EISs to respond to comments, but the regulations don't say what the people are commenting on because there's no more draft EIS. So again, a little bit of mystery, some unclarity. After reading through a lot of pages of regulations, like one of my main takeaways is there's just a lot of unknowns and there's a lot of discretion vested in the decision maker. So say the decision maker is a forest supervisor. Well, they can have public comment. Again, remember the FANEC can be any form that they choose so that they can choose to have public comment. They can choose to publish it or they can choose not to. So there's going to be a lot of discretion with individual decision makers, as well as a lot of different processes being taken by all the different agencies in all the different departments across the federal government. So confusion and litigation, that's also in our, you know, in our near-term future. One more thing about these NEPA regulations is, according to a memo from the Council on Environmental Quality, it does not intend for these regulations to apply retroactively, like to projects that are already in process. However, because the existing regulations have been rescinded, and if these don't apply retroactively, there is a lot of uncertainty for projects that are in the works right now, what actually the regulatory structure is for them. So who knows? Again, confusion and litigation are coming to us as we sift through these new NEPA regulations. So that's a little fast and furious about NEPA. I think that probably somewhere around September or October, we should do a deep dive once a little bit more is known about how these NEPA regulations are being used. So be on the watch for the Forest Climate Alliance talking a little bit more about NEPA. But unfortunately, there's more executive orders and more executive actions in their wake to talk about next. These two executive orders specifically focused on increasing timber production, and they were both released on March 1st of this year. The first, addressing the threat to national security from imports of timber and lumber, instruct the Secretary of Commerce to investigate the impacts of timber imports on national security and submit a report by the end of the year that, importantly, includes findings and recommendations for increasing security of the domestic timber supply chain through strategic investments and permitting reforms. So we're not entirely sure what that's going to look like, but there will be a suite of suggestions coming later in the year of more things that the executive can do to increase domestic timber production. And the second EO had a more immediate effect. especially given its title, the immediate expansion of American timber production. This calls for a massive ramp up of logging in federally managed forests. So this EO frames logging as the primary purpose of federal forest management and increasing timber production as a matter of national and economic security, and aims to reverse onerous federal policies that have prevented the, quote, ability to fully exploit our domestic timber supply. So you can kind of, they're kind of telegraphing where they're going to go with this one. So this EO directs agencies to eliminate any existing policy, regulations, settlements, guidance, etc., that creates an undue burden on logging in federal forests, and also encourages them to set deadlines for the agencies to develop strategies to streamline NEPA analysis and expedite review under the Endangered Species Act of Forest Service and BLM forest management projects. So this EO sets the stage for the agency and regulatory actions that we're seeing right now. And again, the entire focus of this is a massive ramp up of logging on federal public lands. So one of the first ways that this is getting implemented is through this Forest Service Emergency Situation Determination. In April, the Secretary of Agriculture issued an Emergency Situation Determination memo for the entire U.S. Forest Service. And according to the secretarial memo, national forests are in a crisis due to severe wildfires, insects and disease outbreaks, invasive species, and other stressors whose impacts have been compounded by too little active management. That's a resounding narrative that flows through all of these, is there has not been enough logging, and therefore these forests are in having a health crisis. The Secretary of Agriculture determined this to be an emergency and made this emergency situation determination that covers 112,646,000 acres of Forest Service land. That is 59% of all of the land managed by the U.S. Forest Service. So after an emergency situation determination is declared, the Forest Service may carry out authorized emergency action to, quote, achieve relief from threats to public health and safety, critical infrastructure, and mitigation of threats to natural resources. To be eligible to use this authority, at least 50% of the treatment area must be within the ESD designation. So theoretically, it can also be used on a lot of land that is not under this ESD, which again covers 59% of national forests. So this has the potential to have like massive expansion beyond its already large footprint. Now, what changes if you're a project that moves forward under the ESD? First is that it works to streamline the NEPA analysis. Again, another theme, like let's just get that NEPA analysis out of the way as quickly as possible with as little real analysis as possible. So with the projects that are in the ESD area, instead of a suite of alternatives being analyzed, like different action alternatives, which has been considered the heart of a NEPA analysis, the agency only needs to analyze a no action alternative and one action alternative. So for those of you like familiar with NEPA analyses, you're probably used to seeing a no action alternative, because again, required by statute, a preferred action alternative, and then a couple others to compare. Like, well, what happens if we do this? What happens if we do this? And then you can see the different impacts. That's gone. With an ESD, they only have to look at the preferred action alternative, and that's all. And the other big change is that for projects in the ESD, there is no pre-decisional objection. And what this has been is before a final decision is made, it's like one last time for interested parties to say, no, that's not a good idea. You're violating this law. There's a way we can like work it out and come to an agreement before you make your decision. And so that step of administrative process is taken away. And so there's just a decision and then litigation, then nothing, then just abiding by a bad decision. There's just, limited ability for the public to be involved in helping the Forest Service make good decisions. So that's what changes under the ESD. And then what kind of projects can happen under this new emergency situation determination? It's a pretty broad sweep of emergency actions, honestly. Almost everything that the Forest Service wants to do could probably fit under one of these. These include the salvage of dead or dying trees or trees damaged by natural disasters, commercial and non-commercial sanitation harvest of trees to control insects or disease, reforestation or replanting of fire-impacted areas, removal of hazardous trees in close proximity to roads and trails, removal of hazardous fuels, which is very, very expansively defined by the agency, and restoration of water sources or infrastructure. And note that water sources includes whole watersheds, like drinking watersheds are considered a water source for the purposes of this determination. So that is a big sweeping move, again, to streamline NEPA process and remove public process. You can see a pattern in these executive orders, right? Like, without congressional action, the executive branch cannot change the underlying statutes. NEPA, the ESA, the National Forest Management Act, those are all statutes that Congress makes. So what can they do? They can mess with the regulations. They can mess with the definitions. They can mess with the guidances. All of the things that the federal agencies do to implement those statutes can be changed through executive action and executive orders. That's what they've been focused on. And they're doing pretty much everything they can to increase timber production. So last big substantive piece for me is we're going to come to the ESA, the Endangered Species Act. And when it comes to the ESA, right, it means that the federal government, they're stuck with the language of the statute. And in the statute itself, it prohibits the taking of threatened and endangered species. And this term take, again, is defined by the statute very specifically to mean harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, wound, kill, trap, capture, or collect, or attempt to do any of those things to threaten an endangered species. So those are all prohibited by the statute. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service, which implement the ESA on land and sea, further defined the word harm within that statutory definition of take to mean an act which actually kills or injures wildlife. Such an act may include significant habitat modification or degradation, where it actually kills or injures wildlife by significantly impairing essential behavioral patterns, including breeding, feeding, or sheltering. And this is important. This definition is the only thing that has brought in habitat modification or loss of habitat into that statutory definition of take. And this definition has been relied on to protect the habitat of many threatened and endangered species, including our friends here, the northern spotted owl. So in April, in response to these executive orders, these same agencies, Fish and Wildlife Service and NIMS, proposed to rescind that definition of harm because, quote, the regulations do not accord with the single best meaning of the statutory text. So they just got rid of any mention of habitat and habitat modification in the ESA, and they didn't replace it with anything. They just said the word harm within the statutory definition of take just focuses on the impacts to individual animals and not habitat. So while this doesn't necessarily mean that all future habitat loss will not be considered harm by the consulting agencies who make that determination, there is a much less clear path to this finding And agencies could conceivably say, like, sure, like you can cut down the habitat of the species so long as it's not shown that you are harming an individual animal. Like, oh, there were no owls found in that forest. Well, then you can just log the forest because you're not harming an actual animal. This could be really bad for a lot of our threatened and endangered species friends. So it's just a way that the executive branch is looking into this world of regulations, of definitions, of guidances, and seeing what leverage they have to change things. Again, without dealing with the statutes themselves, to really make things harder for people who care about the land, who care about communities, who care about the wildlife that we share this with. So, whew, that was a lot. I even went a little fast to try and fit it all in. Apologies for all that heavy news. We will talk a little bit at the end about actions. And I just want to remind you all before handing this off to Grace that, like, we're all in this together. Like, one of the amazing things about the Forest Climate Alliance is it's a coming together of people and resources across the entire region who are looking at this and who care about this. And that this will get more important than ever, that we really like tend our ecosystem of strategic action to respond to the executive actions, as well as the legislative and judicial ones that we'll be talking about in the very near future. And I look forward to continuing this conversation with you both at the end of this webinar, and then again in August when we talk about the judicial actions.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. As I mentioned in my intro, you can hear the rest of this presentation on the Coast Range Radio.
You're listening podcast. To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kbu.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934.